Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop and trust your intuition. Through the wonderful array of guests we have on the show and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to The Voice of Intuition. It's the show that helps you connect with your intuitive nature. I have a very special guest on the show today, and I think I say that every week because I do have special guests on the show, okay? Just get over that. That's what we're going to do. But today it's all about the emptiness syndrome. Now, I don't know whether you've heard of that or not, but it's a stage of life that women go through, or actually men will probably go through it, but I tend to focus on women because I am. But I know when I went through it, it's a time in your life where you feel like you've got this particular role, mother, wife, you know, and there's these jobs and these things that you do and your life is so busy. And then the kids leave home and all of a sudden you've got this feeling of emptiness, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. But I've got the expert on how to do that, and her name is Lisa. So welcome to the show, Lisa.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Hi, this is going to be cool. This is good because this is your expertise and this is what I really like. I know you help women with that transitional periods of different times of their life, but I really wanted to focus on emptiness because I experienced it so much. And I want to know, I'm going to put my feelings and thoughts into it as well. I hope there's no tears, but I know it's quite a challenging time in your life. But first of all, Lisa, I want you to tell the people how you got from wherever that was to wherever you are now, just to get a little bit more idea about your background.
Yeah, thanks. As I was listening to your opening, it twigged in me a different way of sharing this story, and it is the evolution of not listening to my intuition to listening to my intuition throughout the journey that brought me to where I am here today. So I was an educator for 20 years. Interestingly, however, I did not ever want to be an educator. The story of lots of people who are in the field of education, they always knew that they wanted to be a teacher in that system. And I actually didn't. I really didn't want to be an educator because my dad was. And I saw how much of his life that it consumed. And I wanted to have a life that was able to have more time for me to spend with my family in particular. And I stopped listening to that intuition when I got to the end of university, because I was faced with an unknown of, well, what do I do now? And education was something that was there. I loved children. So there was a spark of that. I loved working with children. I had done that throughout my young adulthood. So I thought, well, in education, I can work with children, which is my passion. And I will just have to figure out how to make it work for my family. Well, that not listening to my intuition, as always, led me down a really challenging path. So while I love children, I found the structure of the education system to be remarkably difficult. And I was always pushing against the structure to the point where I was physically broken down by the pushback that I was always trying to do to make the system better for all of the humans who were involved in that system. And at the same time of my body physically breaking down from, you know, 20 years of this extreme effort, my children, as you talked about at the beginning, were getting to this phase where all of a sudden they didn't need me in the same way. And the goals and dreams I'd had for my life looked like getting an education, having a career, and having a young family. That was a story that I knew and I understood and I could envision. And one day, and it actually happened really quickly, like the transition from kids who need you intensely to kids who need you not so intensely happens a lot more quickly than I thought it would. And I suddenly found myself on the other side of everything I had dreamed for my life and thinking, but this kid, like, I am only at the beginning still. There has to be more. And I want to know what this phase can look like. And so after abandoning myself and abandoning my intuition and giving it away over and over and over again, I reclaimed my intuition and I reclaimed myself and I resigned from my education career and I built this coaching business to support women and create a space for women's experience and voices so that we can start paving a way, so that we can create story, so that younger mothers and people who have children can look ahead and see, oh, there is a really beautiful life that can happen after this road that I've walked.
Wow. Okay. So you went through that. I really can resonate with that because I always wanted, I didn't always want to be a teacher. I never ever wanted to be a teacher, but mm-hmm. I always thought that everything I did was quite in the educational aspect. Things that I do, even with the podcast, I like someone to get a learning from it. And mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be a major, let's write on the whiteboard and get it all done. But it's just those little aha moments. And I didn't know that. I always remembered as a younger person wanting to help people. And of course, at school, that means nothing. We have to put into a box. And you were put into this because you want to help people. You need to be a teacher. Because you love kids, oh, you need to be a teacher. It's like that's what you need to be. That's what, that's the role you have to play. And you tend to go along those lines because, honestly, you don't know anything else.
No.
That's all you've got, isn't it? You go by society's rules, but they're not deliberate rules. They're just what they know. I can really resonate with that. So you got into when you were teaching and you went into your transformational coaching business, were the kids with you then or did they go after you already did that transition?
Yeah, so I will say my kids, it is still a process that's happening. And so my oldest just graduated from high school in June. We had the whole summer where they were working at a residential summer camp. So I experienced what that empty nest really feels like and also what it feels like when they come home because they're back now for a little while. Well, my youngest is graduating from high school this year. They're only one school year apart. So they are intently observing this process. And there was a time just over a year ago where I had taken a 6-week leave from teaching because I couldn't put one foot in front of the other anymore. And when I had been off for about 2 weeks, there was this moment where one of my kiddos looked at me and said, "Oh, there you are." And it was, they were seeing the me that they hadn't seen in a really long time come back to the surface. So that knowing in my children actually was a sense of knowing for me that I couldn't keep living the way I was living because I wasn't being my authentic. I wasn't being my authentic self. I was playing a role. I was playing a lot of roles, but the educator role was creating a mask around myself and a block between myself, my family, my friends, because I wasn't showing up in my as who I truly am, in my wholeness. And so it's been an interesting process for them to watch me set myself free from something that was really hard.
Oh, okay. So when you're talking about presenting yourself as your authentic self, not turning up as your authentic self, I can remember going through stages where I really didn't think people would like my authentic self because mm-hmm. There does tend to be a lot of suppressed anger or suppressed guilt or all those suppressed emotions that we have. So, you know, you do have that stage where you sort of go, will people actually like me? And it is a real challenge. So not only are you experiencing what you're going through at home, you're experiencing what you're going through internally, like a lot. Mm-hmm. It is a big challenge. But when you talk about your authentic self, how do you know if you're not presenting your authentic self? And I ask you this in a way that maybe you could give me a couple of examples, because people are listening and they're sort of going, well, you know, that's me. That's what I do. That's who I am. But is that really? Like, mm-hmm. How do we know when we're not presenting our authentic self, or what that actually looks like?
Yeah, it's such a good and important question. And for me, it was, I looked in the mirror one day and I didn't recognize the person who was looking back. And that was the first sign for me of, oh, there is something deeper happening here. And what happens is, and this is a lot of the work that I do with clients, is teasing out the roles that we play versus our actual identity. So it's not that there isn't intersection in those two elements, but they're not the same thing. And that, I think, is where a lot of us get lost. And so the roles that we play, so for me specifically, I played the role of mother, I play the role of wife, I play the role of educator, I played the role of leader. Those were roles that I played. But society shows us that those are who we are, but they're not, because those are things that can be taken away from us, that can change in a heartbeat, that are external to our actual being. So the work is turning inside and actually asking the question, who am I? And when I pose that question to clients, which I don't do right away because it's a big question, yes. A lot of the time, and more often than not, the answer is, I don't know. And I don't know if I have ever known, because we have been presented with roles of productivity, roles of what we should aspire to, roles of, you know, what's determined to be successful. But there's not a lot of focus on the self. So I talked about the roles that I played. Who I actually am is independent, creative, loving. I've lost some of my words. I'm a little overwhelmed in that, but it's the words that actually describe who you are at your core. And there is some overlap there. Like, when I use leader as a role, being a leader is also part of who I am. Being a teacher is a role I played. Being a teacher is actually part of who I am as well, just in a very different context from how I spent most of my life being a teacher. And that was being somebody else's expectation of what a teacher is, that is very limited in its scope and what you as a human being are allowed to bring to it.
Now that's starting to make sense. That's starting to really resonate, because again, I can take that back to how I was feeling. And I did want to teach, but I didn't want to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're meaning. So when you're talking about the two different areas there, yes, you may feel that you're a leader or you're a teacher, but it doesn't mean you have to sit that into a particular role.
Exactly.
You could be a teacher of art, not necessarily be going through the academic situation. You could still be just showing people how to do painting. It's still mm-hmm. teaching, and it's still connecting with your creativity as well. So yeah. It's about understanding who we are and taking that to the role. So it doesn't really matter what role you're playing.
Yes, yeah, you got
yeah.
it.
Yeah. yeah. So to be authentic, it's bringing you to the role,
absolutely.
Not the role to you.
Yeah. And that's what creates sustainable change, right? Is the actual act of knowing who I am and then acting and taking action from that well-resourced place. So when I work with clients, that is the first part of the work that we do, is, you know, getting in the weeds and digging into who am I really? What is really most important about who I am? And then once I have that and I've filled that very empty well, because most of the time it is a very empty well from people who have been pouring into other people for the majority of their lives. Once you fill that, then you can come to whatever the change is that's happening in your life from a place of knowing who you are and why you are doing what you're doing and why it matters. So, for example, when I am working with clients to put a plan in place for how to walk forward into their lives, if they are looking for a new career, for example, then one of the things we talk about is exactly what you just said. Like, what is the most important thing to you, and what will bring you joy, and what will feel like fun, and what will fill you up instead of completely draining you? Mm. Or if they are working on a relationship, because that is something that evolves when your children leave, because if you haven't spent intentional time continuing to build a relationship with your partner, often what happens is that relationship becomes organizational, right? You're the leaders of a team, and you're co-parenting and you're coaching together, but you develop a shorthand of organizational language, but you lose some of the intimacy in how you communicate with each other. And so when I'm working with clients around that, around rebuilding and reconnecting with their partner, if that's the right thing for them, then it's the same process of, okay, what do you love about you? Fall madly in love with you, and then you will be able to show up to that conversation in a way that is two people who are meeting each other as loving equals.
Oh, it sounds cool. Okay, so now I want to get a little bit more details about the emptiness side of things, because mm-hmm. that's what we're sort of focusing on. So what does emptiness, I know there was an emptiness syndrome that they used to talk about. What does emptiness mean to you? Like, how, the other thing that I actually, sorry, before I go into there, what mm-hmm. you said about when you feel drained, that's when you know you are definitely not being authentic, when you feel mm-hmm. drained.
Yes.
And that's one of those huge, big red flag moments. So, yeah. And if somebody, if you feel drained after being with somebody, that is often one of those signs that, yeah, just you need to do some work. Definitely deep work. Yeah. But what is emptiness syndrome, or what is emptiness? You know, what are people feeling or experiencing while they're going through this?
Mm-hmm. So I like to use the example of what happens when you have a child as the seed for what happens when your child leaves. So when you have a child and you bring that human home, you have this massive life change where literally everything in your world is suddenly different. And then that becomes your reality, right? Caring for these humans, it becomes a massive part of your identity. And a lot of that is developed by our culture and this myth and narrative around the perfect mother, and that we have to completely abandon ourselves and give ourselves over to our children so that they are our whole focus and they are our whole world. And then our children, ideally we have children to create humans who are going to create beautiful, wonderful things in the world. And to do that, they need to be independent and on their own. So they end up leaving home, which is exactly what they're supposed to do. But when you have been a person who has been abandoning yourself over and over and over again to create this mythical motherhood myth, you turn around and realize, well, those kids are gone and I don't have a purpose anymore and I don't know who I am. And there is a deep sense of grief and loss that comes along with that. Just like when you have a new human, I went through some grief and loss around like a week ago. I was a professional. I was, you know, going out and seeing other people every day. I was, you know, all the things that made up my identity before I had children. And in one heartbeat, all of that shifted and changed. And this shift is almost as dramatic. Like it happens really quickly. And it's not that your children don't ever need you anymore. Like, that is certainly not the case. As they get older, their problems shift and change, but it's not the same kind of continuous caregiving that they need when you're younger. And I was thinking back to a comment that you made earlier around like that part feeling comfortable. Right? It feels comfortable when we're in that young family phase because we see it everywhere. We have it. Families look different. There's a vast and beautiful rainbow of what families look like, but we have a really good idea of what it means to care for humans. There's not a lot of story for what this phase of life looks like. So that is also part of the grief, because there's this massive wondering of, well, who am I now? If I'm not this person who I was for 18, 19, 20, however many years that was, who am I? And at this phase in life, figuring that out all over again in a way and in a space where very few people talk about it is really hard.
Yeah, I have to bring forward my little experience, because mine happened very, very quickly in the same sort of token. It was over an 18-month period. I went from a family of five to a single person, and it was really quite horrendous. I had the two older ones went to move, and they lived with their partners, and the youngest one was going off to university. And the relationship was breaking down, knew that was not going to be working. And all of a sudden I was there on my own with no one to help with decisions. No reason to make decisions. Like, we make a lot of our decisions with children in mind, with partner in mind. You know, we do, that's what we've lived with. That's what I lived for the 20 years doing that, going, all right, I've got to get them to football and to soccer and to netball and to here and to there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you bring your partner into, and we need to be working this out, need to work that out. I did everything around everyone else. And I remember the same sort of thing as you were saying. I was sitting there thinking, I really don't know who I am. I don't know what to do. I don't have any direction. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what life's about. But one of my biggest things that I struggled with was making a decision. I had no one to bounce ideas from. I had no reason to make it. I had no boundaries to make a decision. Mm-hmm. I had no boundaries left. Like, it was like, if I need to make a decision on dinner tonight, it's, well, what do the kids will eat? When will they be home? What does the husband like? You know, blah, blah. So you've got these boundaries. All of a sudden, those boundaries are gone. And when you've got no boundaries, it is terrifying to start with.
Yes. Yeah. And then it's beautifully liberating.
Yeah. Yeah. But for the first 6 months, I can assure you, I struggled to make decisions. At one stage, I would go to the shops to do my grocery shopping. I could not even work out what to have for dinner. I remember I lived on jam sandwiches for dinner for about a month. Uh-huh. Yes, I don't recommend that. but it really is. We will all go through that. And as you said, it's probably my way of grieving and things like that. Uh-huh. We all go through it a different way. Yeah. But that feeling of not knowing who you are or what you want to do was horrendous. It was so overwhelming that I had to make those steps. I really had to put that time and effort into it. So where I probably could have done it a bit stronger earlier and not have to get hit by a brick wall. And the only reason I'm saying this, Lisa, is because there's people like you that can help people like that. Well, there wasn't that around when I was going through it. Mm-hmm. And I'm hesitant when I say that because there probably was people around, but because of not having an internet then, you didn't know about it. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, people don't have to go through what I went through for as long as I went through it, because there is other people around there that can help. So I guess where I'm going with this is that if people are in that realm, in that area where they're starting to go, okay, I need to look at something, I need to go forward, I need to snap out of this, what steps would you suggest that they start to look at after that?
Mm-hmm. So one is looking around and finding community. So that's really important, because along with, you know, your story and everything that you were sharing, there's a lot of shame, particularly for women, in feeling sad because our children are, you know, they're flying and they're doing the things that they were meant to do. And so everything in society is telling us, like, well, you should be thrilled. Look at your children. They're doing this, they're doing that. And there's not, but for everything that happens in our child's life, there is an equal and opposite reaction that happens for us, right? Yes. I am equally, and that's where the role of duality is so key. And that's another really good element to lean into, is curiosity and duality. So accepting that you can feel both joy and pride and excitement for the young humans in your life, and you can feel grief and the unknown and unsettling and destabilizing, right? That's the word that I use with clients a lot, is that this is a remarkably destabilizing time because everything that you have defined your life by is shifting. And so leaning into accepting both of those things existing at the same time and getting really curious, instead of judging yourself for why you are having a feeling or an emotion, just sit with it and get curious about it. Don't try and push it off either, because that's a lot of the strategy that we have been given over our lifetimes, is like, don't feel the emotion. Distract yourself, go and do something else. And I often will have people coming to me saying, you know, all the self-care strategies that I used to use, they just don't work anymore. And I don't know why. And I never feel the way I want to feel. And it's because those self-care strategies often have actually been a distraction and not healing, right? It's like medication. It will mask what's actually happening, but it's not healing. So it's taking time to get curious about what you're feeling, really thinking about, who am I as a human being, connecting with community, and leaning into the possibility that exists now, and accepting that, again, duality, it can be both terrifying and liberating all at the same time.
Yeah, and actually that is how you feel too. I absolutely agree with you 100%. As much as the fear and everything else comes up, we know it's coming up because we've suppressed it for so long, and it's time to step forward and move and go into it. And look, honestly, after you, the way you're explaining that, the thing is, having that empty nest is a perfect time to do that. Like, you can't do it when, I shouldn't say you can't do it, it's harder to do it when the kids are there. It's almost like the universe saying, hey, guess what? You know, life's changing. You need to change now. You've got the time. You've got the ability. You know, for you to sit there and say, you know, you just take on that emotion and get an understanding of it. The only time I could have done that would be on the toilet when I had kids.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I had 3 kids in 3 years before I worked out what was causing it and stopped. But so as you can, that's why mine left so quickly. So as quick as I had them, they left just as quickly. So my transitions in life were very, very direct. And it was like getting hit over the head with a baseball bat and saying, come on, time to step up to the new phase now.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and yeah. it's, Yeah. So my kids are same. They are one school year apart. So we have been going through everything all at the same time. You know, it was back to school week for us this week. And my youngest child is going to school without his older brother for the first time ever. And he's in grade 12. And he said, you know, Mom, it's kind of sad being the only person on the front porch for the first day of school picture. And so one of the things that I think is important about experiencing our emotion and our transitions in life in front of our children is that they actually get to see it and understand it. Like when I think back to when I left home to go to university, I remember, so I know my mom was very sad because she wore her sunglasses the entire time and didn't take them off. And I knew she was crying, but that was the only thing I saw. I didn't see anything else beyond that because I wasn't part of that immediate world anymore. And so there haven't been examples for those of us who have either chosen this life or, and I mean life with children, or have experienced a life with children. A lot of the time, even though we felt like we were making decisions, it actually was coming from somebody else's expectation, be it parent expectation, society expectation. I think there's some really empowering work happening by some young women at this point in time, standing up and saying, that's actually not the life that I want. And I'm going to make choices that are aligned with who I truly am. And I think it's really exciting to see young women standing in their power in that way, where it has taken me, you know, 46 years to get to a point where I can say, so I don't want to live that way anymore. This is how I actually want to live.
Yes. And I agree. I watch my daughters doing it. And it's it's so, you feel like you've done the right thing. It's taken a long time. My kids are now in their 30s. So, and I've got heaps of grandchildren like coming out of my ears. But it's so empowering and so lovely to watch them and see them sort of stand up there and you realize you've done good. But all the negatives and all the crap that you go through and all the learnings that you have to endure sometimes to get through to where you are, when you can sit back and, yes, my kids have gone through the teenagers, so it's like I lived that, I survived that. And they've left home and they've had children of their own. And you can sit back and go, you know what, there's got to be some good bits there. So, you know, every time they say something, I sort of say, yeah, you probably got back from your mother. And all the negatives, I say, oh, you probably got back from your father. Because that's what you do.
True.
And then you go, but hang on, you probably got that from me. But anyway, let's not own that one up. Mm-hmm. But it is. It's nice to sit back and see them. And it's nice to sit back and watch them go through their hard times. As much as you want to help them, it's nice to see them watch how they deal with that, watch what they do to get through that. And it blows me away sometimes watching my kids. I'm in awe of them. And yes, I have to take on board that some of that's me and some of that's their father, and it's like, you know, the good and the bad. But it's just, yes, it's so nice to be able to see that. So going through all these transitional periods that we go through, it is worthwhile. And one of the things, I guess, I'm going here, and I don't mean to be talking about myself. I don't usually do that, Lisa, but your subject is very close to my heart.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I did, I was in a relationship. My ex-husband was quite emotionally abusive. So I had to deal with that, and I had to learn how to cope with that and what to do with that. Eventually, we split up. Like I said, I went from family of five to a single. Eventually, that all dissipated. But one of my learnings was, if I stayed in that relationship because of the children. I stayed in it because of the children. If I'd looked a bit more into myself, and I started doing my spiritual stuff when I was in my early 20s. So I knew about it, and I was talking the talk and not walking the walk. Mm-hmm. But I watched my eldest daughter go into exactly the same relationship that I was in. And it was like, oh, bugger. If I had shown them my vulnerability, I'd shown them my problems and things like that instead of hiding them, maybe she wouldn't. She wouldn't have gone into that. Now, my younger daughter didn't see it as much, and she's gone into a fantastic relationship. She's got a great relationship. But my eldest daughter had to go through a marriage breakdown as well. So that was one of those things that I went, you know what? I'm no longer hiding anything from my children. You know, mind you, they are adults, so they can handle it. But these are the sort of things that we look at. We go through these things. And as you said, you saw your mum in tears. You know, you knew that she was in tears. We need to embrace that. We need to say, oh, God, I'm a sook. You know, I think my kids are getting an award. I'm going to be in tears because I'm proud of that.
And that's absolutely. That I think, so one, I hope that you have given yourself some grace around you did the best you could with the generational trauma that you held.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. And that's part of, it's the gift and the curse of generational trauma, right? That we, there are stories that live within our DNA that until we are awake to them, we're going to continue to experience. And I think the realization that you had that was really beautiful, sorry, I'm getting a little teary, was that if I had brought my full self into my role as mother, rather than trying to fit myself into this box that I was told motherhood was, it would have shifted, right? It would have, because if you come into the role as partner and you come into the role as mother, grounded in your own body and knowing what alignment feels like and knowing what unalignment feels like. When you start feeling the twinges of unalignment and you are in those roles as your full self, then you can pay attention and you have enough self-love and worth to say, oh, this is not right. It's not right for me. And if it's not right for me, the truth is it's not going to be right for anybody around me. And so if I set myself free, then I will set everybody else around me free as well. And that's the work of generational healing.
Oh, I wish I'd heard that 40 years ago. Thanks very much, Lisa.
Sorry. I was six then, so.
That is so true, because I kept on looking. It wasn't feeling right. It certainly wasn't feeling right. But I felt like I had to suck it up, Princess, because it was right for the family. Mm-hmm. When, like I said, you know, how many years down the track, I realized it wasn't right for the family. If it wasn't right for me, then it wasn't right for the community, for my family community. Yeah. And those words, that's gold. That's absolutely gold. Before I ask you any more questions too, if you want to connect with Lisa, jump onto her website, which is www.leaninfindhome.com. Okay, so it's about leaning in and finding home.com. Sorry, I had to say that. I forgot.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I just wanted to pop in because there was something I really connected to what you said, and it was the seed of what planted that in me. And that is, there are deep generational wounds that have gone back through the women in my family around, I call them witch wounds. And I saw it playing out in my mother. And when I was 30, so my youngest child was 6 months old, and my oldest was not quite two. She was diagnosed with colon cancer in May, and she died in October. And she was only 52 years old, but I watched her leave this world in rage because she had abandoned herself for her family for years. And she had finally gotten into a career and a place where she was standing in her power. She was standing in her light. And within, you know, weeks of her getting this job, she was diagnosed with cancer and it was game over. Like, it was stage four by the time they found it. And watching her leave the world in rage lit a fire in me that would not be me. That I would take that rage that she had and use it as fire to change how I lived in the world. And so that I could go out knowing that I had done the healing that needed to happen in our line and live in a way that felt aligned and joyful and painful and hard and all those things, but real.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to hear about that with your mum. Funnily enough, I experienced something similar too, because my mum only passed away last Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I did a cruise with her, and she had started to get dementia was coming through. And I did a cruise with her. And I remember she was really angry. She had to experience dementia to be able to get rid of those feelings. Like, she took the ring off. She didn't want to be married to Dad anymore, you know. And I know that she was experiencing exactly what I experienced. So it was definitely generation. Mum experienced, I did, and then my daughter did. And I really understood that. So when she was sitting there and my family was saying, oh, Mum's being such a bitch and rah, rah, and I'm thinking, no, she's not. She's just getting rid of all this. Yeah. She's almost like vomiting it all out. She needs to be able to do this. And so going on this cruise, I allowed her to just get it all out. By the time she got back from the cruise, it was like, all right, this is the rest of my life now. And she was quite like in peace, like, you know, and I could hear her stand up and she would say, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. So she was standing her ground, but she got rid of all the nastiness that went with it, if that made sense.
Yeah, it totally does.
So it's so sad to think that your mum got to that stage and then it was sort of taken away from her, whereas at least mine had the ability to go through and get rid of some of that, because we do hold it. You know, it is easy to do that. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed too, that we've broken those ties on that generation as well, that generational crap that we don't need. And look, people that are listening, be aware of it. You aren't, have a look at those cycles. That's what I was looking at, the cycles, you know, watching what there's going through. I had to acknowledge that my father is a narcissist, and it was really, really challenging. And I'm not saying he's a bad one, but he is one. And so I had to look at that differently. That's when I married. I married my father, and my daughter married the father, you know? So it's looking at those. And of course you can help with that, Lisa. But I want to actually ask, you have got a book. I'm going to put the book up, and you have got a podcast. I didn't know you had a podcast.
So my podcast is called Transforming 45, and it is a place where sometimes I tell my own stories. Mostly I invite incredible women to share their own stories of transformation. So how that transformation allows them to show up as the most real version of themselves. So it's building a community where there is story around what this phase of life looks like. And my journal actually came out of the podcast, because it was in the spring and I had been looking back at the content of my podcast, and it had been pretty heavy and intense for a couple of episodes, for many episodes actually. And I thought, you know, I just want to do something that's a little bit fun and a little bit light. And so I started thinking about two things. One, what do I really love and find fun? And two, a question that clients were asking me was, but how do I reconnect with my body, right? That work around the somatic listening to the body, because that's how we know if we are aligned or not aligned, right? This skin suit that we wear is the home of all of the senses that allow us to actually experience the world, but we disconnect from it because it can feel really uncomfortable when we've experienced trauma, when we're experiencing transitions. And it feels safer and more comfortable to live in our thinking minds, but then we numb ourselves to what we are actually feeling, and we numb ourselves to knowing, and we numb ourselves to alignment or unalignment. So I was thinking about those two things, and this idea sort of downloaded of, well, I really love music. And when I hear songs, I am immediately transported to a very sensory place. So when I hear a song, I can smell the fresh cut grass, or I can see what I was looking at out the window, or I can feel who was touching my shoulder beside me when I heard the song. So I thought, well, maybe a process of the soundtrack of your life would be interesting. So I started working through this process myself of like, well, what would the soundtrack of my life be? And so when I started asking myself that question, songs started surfacing and I just started making a list of them. And then I chose, my goal was to have my life as a soundtrack in 10 songs, but that was not possible. I ended up with 15, actually 16, because I cheated a little bit. And in my podcast episode, I told the story of each song, of how it had created something core in me, and how when I hear that song, I can deeply connect to the sensoriness and the sensoriness that I held in my body. And while I was going through the process, a girlfriend of mine said, "Do you notice that there is a particular time where most of the songs are from?" And there absolutely is. I did try to make sure that there was representation across my life, but a good chunk of the songs is from my life, sort of 16 through 18. Mm. And it's different time periods for different people. But for me, that was a time where I was deeply grounded and connected to my body. I knew who I was. I was confident. I love that girl now and I loved her then. And so the work that I discovered as I was going through this process of coming up with these songs was reconnecting with that sensory memory and reconnecting with that girl who was so grounded and marrying her with who I am today so that I can come back into my body as this, you know, more evolved, wiser version of that girl. But we play roles together. So the journal is that it walks you through the process of how to create the soundtrack of your life. And then it is a 100-day practice of choosing one song every day that you can use as a touch point to be connected to your body. And sometimes it's literally the beat, sometimes it's the melody, sometimes it's a lyric. But what I'm finding is that setting an intention around being physically in my body, having sensory experiences for things, is beautifully healing and allowing me to experience the world in new ways again. And I'll just give one quick example. So one of the songs that I had chosen a couple of weeks ago was "Where the Streets Have No Name" by U2, because there are three songs by U2 where every time I hear the first three notes of the song, I immediately dissolve into tears. And so I sat with, why is that happening? Why is it so powerful that literally it's three notes and I am a hot mess? And when I sat with it, it was because those songs are from a time, again, where I felt like I knew myself, I felt really grounded, and I felt like everything was ahead of me. And then I was at this place where I felt like all of that was behind me. And so the three notes of that song were a musical representation of all the grief that I felt around that.
Wow.
And so leaning into that and letting myself have that realization and process it led to some real healing, because I heard the song come on the radio just a few days ago and I didn't cry. I actually felt some joy in taking all of the excitement that I felt at the beginning of the chapter that I wrote, because now my journey's not over. I'm starting a new chapter. So I can take the energy of that from that time and put it into this embodied phase.
Into the now. Yeah. Wow. So that is called Your Life is a Soundtrack by Lisa Boat. Now, jump on and have a look at that. We are getting really low on time. I should have forewarned you. Sorry about that. have you got something really quick you can just a final hurrah before we say goodbye?
Just listen to yourself. You know, going back to the beginning of your podcast where you talk about intuition, It is a gift. We are taught that it's not real, but it absolutely is. And it is a gift that when we listen to it, tells us all the answers that we actually need. So give yourself some space and time to be quiet, to stop and slow down, step off of the narrative that tells you that you have to be busy and productive all the time. Slow down, give yourself some time to actually listen and pay attention, and then take just the next right step. You are not going to know what the whole process looks like, but you can take one small step towards it.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Lisa. Stay where you are. We are running out of time. Stay where you are. I will be back with you and I'll have a chat with you in a minute. Let me press all the right buttons. So guys, jump on the website. It is leaninfindhome.com. Or jump onto my website, intuitivenature.com.au, and discover what your intuitive natures are, because we do receive those messages in all sorts of ways. And what Lisa was saying with the sound, it's a particular way that we're bringing in those intuitive messages. So that's gold. I love that. We can get it in so many different ways. But that's me for now. I have to say goodbye because we're running out. I'm watching the clock ticking. And have a great week, everyone. And I will see you all next week. Okay, bye for now.